kids skateboarding, a common sight on the Santa Cruz boardwalk. How do I know this? The kid is usually me. I've loved skateboarding all of my life. As a kid, I'd spend what money I could get from my parents on DVDs of old skate parts. When I was 9, I was glued to ESPN 2, watching the X Games. I was watching my idol at the time, Tony Hawk, land the first ever 900. For a long time, I did odd yard work around the neighborhood until I could afford my own board. I dove in, getting better and better. It was an escape from the world around me, and whenever things got tough with school or my home life, I always had this to fall back on. As I grew up and started skating with a generation under me, I realized they didn't fully understand the history of skateboarding. So I wanted to have a place for them to learn about the culture. I wanted to have a one-stop shop for them to completely just get filled in. While I wasn't alive when skateboarding was invented, I have rode with a few people who were. Skateboarding got kicked off when surfers got bored. They wanted something to stimulate riding a surfboard, so they took the trucks, the wheels that are attached to the bottom of roller skates, and screwed them to a 2x4. This was first called sidewalk surfing. It would just cruise down the street or sidewalk while they were waiting for waves to form, just killing time and not really being its own thing. It was something that what you did when you were waiting to surf. As time went on, these boards evolved. They became larger plywood boards with a more surfboard shape. Surf shops began to support them and sell them. These sidewalk boards. The first surf shop to have an exclusive deal with Trucks and Wheels came into existence. They made a deal with the manufacturer so they wouldn't have to take them off the roller skates. After these boards became more popular, the first trick really came into existence. This was just the act of rocking your trucks over the curb and then popping your back wheels up. As more people began to do this and other tricks like this, a kicktail was added, so it was easier to do this. People realized that skateboarding could be something that stood on its own, and not just what you did when you were waiting for waves to form. With this realization, the invention of the pigboard happened, a wide board with a thick lip. I interrupt your normal programming for a moment to talk about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is Vans. They're cool shoes. The invention of the pigboard created a new style of skating called vert. This type of skating has people skating in emptied out pools or half pipes, dropping in and riding around the bowl, coming up occasionally to do tricks. I can't imagine how they came up with the idea of riding in pools. One of the most intimidating parts of my skateboarding career was dropping in for the first time, standing on the ledge and letting your body weight shift into empty space. Well, to me, this was terrifying. To other people, like big names like Tony Hawk and Steve Caberno, allowed them to push the limits of what could be done on a skateboard. We saw the likes of Mike McGill create the McTwist, where a rider would turn in the air for 2.5 rotations while coming up out of the bowl. Something so dangerous and scary, I barely ever do it. We also saw Tony Hawk create the plant and the eggplant. As more skating tricks like the ollie and the kickflips were invented in the bowl, they were brought out of the bowl. And as this continued, flat ground skating became bigger. Many different trick types, like kickflips and ollie, came to be widespread. The demands of the board began to change. You weren't just cruising or riding in a bowl. As many people shifted towards flat ground skating, they needed something to accommodate that. So you saw the invention of the double-tailed popsicle board. The popsicle board was shaped, well, like a popsicle stick. This allowed for more range of skating. Now people weren't just limited to the skate park or constructed environments. They can move to the street. The world became people's skate parks. Everyday things became the skate parks, like rails, benches, even those weird red balls in front of Target. You saw skaters everywhere. This was no longer a world where you were just cruising around. It was a place where you were skating. As this happened, and the rise of skateboarding began, we saw massive magazines emerge, such as Thrasher, pushing us even more into the mainstream. We saw kids who didn't even skate wearing Thrasher clothes or picking up the magazine. More people saw skating as a sport rather than just this counterculture thing that some kids were doing. Big names like Tony Hawk pushed us even more into the mainstream. We had major brand collaborations with the likes of Nike. We even saw Tony Hawk get his own video game. This limelight on skateboarding grew to the point of having televised events where people were skating on ESPN. We had pushed so far, we were on one of the largest televised sports networks. We were considered a sport. This amazing push was due to skaters like you and me. Just everyday kids consuming and going out and doing. As more and more people saw skateboarding just in the world, they saw it as a sport. They saw it as something that they could watch on ESPN. Skaters just started out as surfers who were bored, but we moved inland and we're here to stay. We've gone from an underground thing that was considered counterculture into a massive thing that people lie that they can do. This shift is amazing. And I just want to be able to tell generations after me and the generations after those how amazing and brave people who pioneered skateboarding were. Thank you for listening to this episode of my podcast about skateboarding. Next episode, I'll be talking about the very early years of skate competitions and the very big names that rose out of them.